business committee. We had a full agenda, and it got depleted today. So we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2722 and invite Representative Greenlick and Representative Hunt to come forward. Sam, would you like to read the bill, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Bill HB 2722 will eliminate the authority of the city to veto the incorporation of a proposed city within 3 miles of an existing city, modifies the circumstances by which a county must reject a proposed incorporation of a city pursuant to written objections to the city within 3 miles of the existing city.
Thank you, Sam. Representative Greenlick, would you like to open while Representative Hunt is preparing the graphic display?
Does he have approval for visual aids?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33, a district that's very much affected by this bill, half of which is in the city of Portland and half of which is within 3 miles of both Beaverton and Hillsborough. The process for forming a new city is a complicated process and requires a variety of things. We just formed one in the metropolitan area in Damascus, so it shows it can be done. But it requires a whole set of things. It requires the people in an area wishing to be considered for a city to get a petition with 10% of the electors. It requires them to develop an economic feasibility analysis of the extent to which the city can be feasible. That feasibility analysis needs to take into consideration the negative impact it might have on cities nearby, and it requires that the county commission of the county where the proposed city lies, or where the majority of the proposed city lies, take all these things into consideration. But under current statute 221034, it requires one other thing, and that is it requires that the city attempting to be considered, the area attempting to be considered for the creation of the city, needs to get, before it can do any of these things, the approval of any city within 3 miles of the proposed limits of the new city. And that is before anything else can happen. In order to present the petition for a new city, the petitioners need to certify, need to have the information that any neighboring city approves their being considered as a city. Now, this bill does a very simple thing. It simply takes that away. It simply says, if any area wants to be considered for a city, it ought to go through all the things that are considered in Statute 221. To become a city, it needs to get the three main petitioners. It needs to get 10% of the proposed residents on a petition. It needs to do the economic analysis. It needs to determine the effect it's having on other cities. But it allows them to go forward with a proposal without the opportunity to be vetoed by other cities. This came up in my district in some of the difficult decisions that are going on around annexation in Washington County. And at a public meeting, some of the citizens of my district, some of my constituents asked, well, if it's necessary to have urban services provided by a city, could we do the economic analysis and determine whether we could create our own city, a city of perhaps 45,000 people, could be a fairly large city. The mayor of Beaverton said, no, don't bother, we veto it. Now, it just doesn't seem to me that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it seems to me, I don't know that it can be economically feasible to create a city in, say, the Bethany area of Washington County. It may or may not be. But it seems to me the one thing the citizens ought to have is the opportunity to make their case. The opportunity to invest if they want to in doing that analysis, the opportunity to get petitions with hundreds or thousands of signatures on it, the ability to withstand a vote to determine whether they really want to incorporate as a city. But they ought to have that opportunity, and I don't think Beaverton or Hillsborough or Portland ought to have the automatic veto. official is saying, no, you can't be considered for city. So that's all this bill does. It's a very simple bill. It simply deletes that section that requires them to come in with a certification that any neighboring city has agreed that it's okay for them to move forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Hunt? We'll hold the questions, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to be here and testify in support of this legislation as well. I'd like to thank my good colleague, Representative Greenlick, for his good work on this. This bill, obviously the implications of this are far beyond Washington County. In fact, I brought a map of my district, about 80% of which is unincorporated, Clackamas County. And if you look at my district, the Oak Grove, Oakfield, Jennings Lodge area, and then over into Representative Flores' district in the Clackamas area, you've got a huge population base, which is looking at issues around their future. And they really have three options as they look at their future. One would be status quo, some form of continued unincorporation. A second would be looking at issues around annexation, how they might or might not be annexed to an existing city. And the third, a very real option, is incorporation of all or part of those areas. Today, if you look at that area right there, if they were to decide to pursue the incorporation route, they would be vetoed. They could be vetoed by Portland and Milwaukee to the north, Happy Valley to the east, Johnson City, Gladstone, and Oregon City to the south, West Lynn and Lake Oswego to the west. Eight cities could exercise veto over that area. And those cities range in size from, what is the population of Portland, 300,000, 400 and some thousand, down to 500 in the city of Johnson City. So imagine, if you will, the city of Johnson City, population 500, could veto the incorporation of a city that well might be 50 or 60,000 people in this area. There's something clearly seriously wrong in the law if that's the situation. I'm not arguing that they should pursue incorporation or annexation or the status quo, but you have an opportunity through this bill to really give them the right to self-determination, to at least keep one of those options on the table. If they want to pursue incorporation, this would give them the ability to move past that potential bump in the road of being annexed by, being vetoed by one or more of those additional cities. So I think this is a very focused and logical change that can be made, and I commend it to you.
Any questions of our representative? Seeing none, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Mogabe.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and representatives. My name is Isidore W. Mogabe. I have some written materials for you, but I'm going to ad-lib some of it because this is a matter that's very near and dear to my heart. I live in the unincorporated area of Bull Mountain, and it was early last year, March, February, when I became aware that Tiger is going to annex us. I took an active part in looking into it, and one of the things I did was to go down to the Department of Taxation and Assessment and get the tax rolls and break down by tax code what property was where and developed what was the value of the property in the area under consideration. And as soon as the numbers came clear to me, I came out of my skin. I said, we ought to form our own city. We don't need anyone. And immediately, the prohibition or the restriction that Representative Greenlick referred to, that we could not do anything without the consent of Tigard, who was in the process of trying to take us over aggressively under a single majority vote, so the probability or possibility of them allowing us to go forth and pursue at least the first phase of that was non-existent. In my opinion, this is one of the most important pieces of legislation concerning annexation. I once knew a bartender named Murray. He used to announce closing time by saying, don't worry where you're going, but you can't stay here. And this is pretty much the situation we have when the county is saying, we're no longer going to preserve, provide urban services. You people are going to have to go somewhere. And just recently, about 9-1, the people on Bull Mountain said, we don't want to go to Tigard. We tried to go to King City, but we couldn't do that because it's right across the street. It's also right across the urban growth boundary, so we were stopped there. So we had no alternatives, nothing to do. The residents of Bull Mountain are a prime example of how this process or bill will benefit people. We've got 8,000 people living on Bull Mountain on 1,400 acres with an assessed property value right around $1 billion. We've already done the feasibility study, at least in the rough, because before we went to King City to ask them to take us in, they certainly wanted to see the numbers. At that time, Tigard was very energetically poisoning the well over at King City, showing why King City shouldn't have anything to do with this. So our hands were tied. This would give us the opportunity to make local politics really local. Where we get rid of all the squabbling about the city subsidizing the people living in the unincorporated areas. I beg your pardon here. This is hot off the press.
You're usually more organized than this.
Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman, I found out about this meeting at about 10:55 this morning. So I put this together, did a little rushing around, we got here, so I beg your indulgence.
Well, then you're well planned.
Okay. Then there's another thing that I'd like to address, and that is the myth. The operative word is myth, that we have elected representatives in the form of the Washington County Board of Commissioners. All during the period of strife leading up to the annexation, when it was apparent up to the 11th hour that we were going to be subjected to a single majority vote, they sat on their hands, they did nothing. We went out and hired an attorney on our own who made it clear to Tigard that they could not proceed with the single majority vote. The law pertaining to that particular area required a double majority vote. Why didn't the county come forward and do something to help us while we were, and when I'm saying we, I'm talking about just people, and you don't see many of us here because there are not a lot of us who have the freedom to be here. A lot of people have time to work, to put in the jobs and the families and things like this, so we're a small active group meeting a lot of people who really look to us to get something done to help them. That's about all I'm going to articulate, except I want to read from this. Everything important about this matter can be summed up in a very short trip back into history. On November 19, 1863, the famous orator Edward Everett was the main speaker at a dedication ceremony. History did not record anything that he said in a speech of over 2 hours. The next speech lasted only a few minutes, but the words spoken by Abraham Lincoln in dedicating the burial ground at Gettysburg had become an everlasting part of our American heritage. We all know the famous opening lines, 47 years ago. Now, you struggle with this very complex problem. I ask you to remember the closing. The government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish in this earth. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Montano? Seeing none, thank you. Christy Monson? She stepped outside. I just waited till you went outside, then I called your name, so.
It's been that kind of day.
Yeah.
For the record, my name is Christine Munson. I'm representing the League of Oregon Cities, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Brought up a City of Salem representative with us, Chair, and with your permission, he'd like to testify also.
Certainly.
I should start with the proviso that I don't normally handle this issue. I'm sure you're used to seeing Linda Ludwig up here, so my apologies if I can't answer any of your questions, but we'll make sure that someone can from the League if you have them. As you know, under current law, within that three-mile limit of a city, there is what people have been calling a veto power of cities. And I think that what this the three-mile limit represents, Chair Garrard and members of the committee, is a good balancing of a policy decision-making from the legislature that created it. What we're looking at is how we develop and what we statewide want to look like in Oregon. And so the legislators who dealt with that issue had to figure out where resources should go and how we should decide where to incorporate in urbanized areas. And if you look at the statute, it does mention urbanized areas. We believe that's a good balance for policymakers, and we believe that was a good decision-making on their part. We support full-service cities. We have cities in Oregon who are incorporated but have troubles providing services. They have trouble providing police, fire, and they contract out to counties. We want our local governments to be strong and be able to provide those services to our constituents and have a good blend of resources for local communities. You know, we would normally support something like this. I mean, the more cities there are, the more membership there is for the League of Oregon Cities. But really, this is a statewide issue. We want to make sure that local resources are developed in a progressive and responsible way. And so we see this 3 mile in the urbanized area rule as a rule that assists our communities in doing that. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you have or refer them to Linda Ludwig in the future. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Any questions of Ms. Bronson?
Is it okay for me to ask questions?
Certainly.
I'll try and be as gentle as I can. Because I feel a little awkward in terms of being a sponsor of the bill. But I really am interested in your sense because there are... The current process gives two different levels of approval of a new city. And I don't think there ought to be bad cities. I don't think there ought to be inefficient cities. I don't think there ought to be small cities. But right now, the process is the first thing that can happen before you can even consider is the city says yes or no. And it isn't just the 3 mile limit. It's 3 miles along the whole length of the city. And then the second is the county decides whether the city makes sense or not. So basically all we're talking about is giving the county as the elected officials of the people in that the full authority to make the decision. You would hope they wouldn't approve a tiny city. You'd hope they wouldn't approve a city that didn't make sense. You'd hope that they're looking at the economic analysis and the effect it would make on cities. But how is public policy helped, is my question, by making that a two-step process? The cities first have absolute veto, and then the county needs to make the substantive determination if the cities agree to. Right? Maybe you can help me understand how public policy is really improved by that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Garrard, Representative Greenlake, I think that's a great question. Thank you for answering it, and thank you for being gentle. I think there are two aspects that we'd like the committee to consider. The first is what is the difference between county services and city services? There are very significant differences in both our authority and our services. Counties tend to be generally dealing with corrections, health services, but the day-to-day functions of a small community in what may be deemed like a city area for roads, public safety, ambulance, fire, are different services. And while they are contracted out to special districts or to counties, I think generally cities are recognized as providing different services and having different authority. And I think the reason that it serves a very good policy purpose is that you're trying to get buy-in and good positive feedback from all the local government organizations and including cities as well as counties, making sure that there's that cohesive buy-in before you get to incorporating a new city with its own authority. not authority that comes from the state, but its own authority, is a very proper way to do that, to make sure that all the surrounding local governments are buying in and supporting that new creature. And again, I'm not an expert on this issue, but that's generally the league's position.
Seeing no other questions, thank you, Christy.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mitch Rose, and I'm the Interim Urban Planning Administrator for the City of Salem. And I'm taking a bit of a chance today. I just found out about this hearing, and I haven't talked to anybody over at the City of Salem about it, but I think I can safely say that the city is opposed to this bill and would have grave concerns about losing the authority that it currently has under the law. I wasn't able to do any research on this before I came over. I believe that this provision in the statute was added in the early 80s, and I believe that it was associated with some of the issues of the time that came out of the incorporation of the city of Kaiser. Kaiser was incorporated in 1982, as you recall, just and it's just outside the northern city limits of the city of Salem. We're very concerned, as you can imagine, about what goes on within 3 miles of our city, and we're particularly concerned about the prospect of incorporating a new city immediately next door to us, particularly one that has not been planned or anticipated in any of the 30-some years of planning now that have gone into our comprehensive plan. Most of our urbanizable land, the land that we expect to need for our business, our housing, our industry over the next 20 years, most of our urbanizable land is immediately east of our current city limits. And all of that land, I would say, is within 3 miles of the city of Salem. It's within, a lot of it is within our urban growth boundary, and there are about 18,000, more than 18,000 people living in the unincorporated area to the northeast. It's generally called, referred to as Hayesville. There are about 14,000 people living to the east and southeast in the area, generally referred to as Four Corners. It would be extraordinarily disruptive of the many years of planning that we've had if a new city were to incorporate in either one or both of those places. And as you can imagine, the city of Salem would certainly have some pretty strong interest in that and would certainly want to protect the authority that it currently has under the law. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Rose?
Yes,
I'm Representative Greenleck. Disappointed, had you not.
What's the point of having a microphone? Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to say this in an ironic way, but are you basically saying that the citizens of Kaiser would have been better off if Salem had been able to veto its formation as a city?
Chair, Representative Greenleck, I certainly won't make that assertion. I think better off depends on any number of things having to do with not only economics, but, you know, subjective values about one's community and livability and so on. I do think that there definitely are some problems associated with having three, four, five cities pop up in one large urban area rather than have one or two larger cities providing the services in the area. For example, suppose the city of Salem starts annexing out to the northeast land that's within the urban growth boundary, land that has been planned to be urbanized and annexed for 20 years, land that the county and the service districts have already signed agreements on saying they understand this to be within the Salem urban growth boundary. Suppose the residents out there decide they don't want to be annexed. And one of the ways to stop that is they'll incorporate. So they'll form a small city out there. That may be an understandable defensive measure for those folks, but I'm not sure it makes much sense from a city planning perspective or a regional perspective.
Ms. Monson, you're right.
Thank you, Chair Gard. Just a couple points. I noticed that Linda Ludwig had in her testimony that this rule was first developed when Millersburg was incorporated near the city of Albany. And so I think just as a small correction. And lastly, not to at all take away from individuals, cities in other areas and in Salem, I guess the league's position, which we want to make clear, is really we're looking at statewide policy and good public policy. Not, I think the individual needs of certain areas can sometimes override some of our decision making, but trying to look at it from a statewide level.
Any other further questions for our panel?
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Would you all speak?
Well, Chair Gard, members of the committee, I was just going to reinforce what she just said. I was over in Senator Ringo's Environment and Land Use Committee on Monday listening to some of the testimony over there and also accompanying our mayor who testified against some of the annexation bills over there on Monday. And one of the things that the people testifying over there said repeatedly is, look, if this is a Portland area problem or it's a problem that's specific to one area, let's deal with it in that context, but don't adopt a bunch of laws that are going to apply statewide and may have some unintended consequences. And I think that's what we're feeling right at the moment with this particular bill, is that it may have some very good reasons for a specific situation associated with the Portland area, but it may have some very strong unintended and adverse consequences for other parts of the state.
It's interesting. Those of us from Eastern Oregon in land use, you feel exactly the same way.
Right.
It's interesting. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wishes to give public testimony in regards to House Bill 2722? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2722 and open a work session on House Bill 2722. Any discussion? Representative Anderson?
Well, yes, I would like to add some discussion and then move this bill. In Southern Oregon Grants Pass 18 years ago, we had this very issue come up. It wasn't within 3 miles, but it was very close. We're a small incorporated area that really resented having the city of Grants Pass saying you cannot become a city. And while our city manager and much of the team felt that we wanted to reserve that area of the county to become Grants Pass, 5, 6, 8 miles out, it would be a long time in the future before most went out there, they were still preserving that option that it could become Grants Pass. It was over a little rise, probably 2 or 3 or 4 miles away from the edge of the city at that time. And it was amazing how the folks in that area felt very strongly. We ought to be able to have our own right. If we want to become a city, we ought to become able to vote on becoming a city. So I've felt very strongly about that ever since. That might have been very providential for the city of Grants Pass to eventually be able to incorporate that area as part of a city. But this is not a major metropolitan area by any means. And if people really feel provincial in the sense that they want to become their own entity, I think they ought to have that right to vote on that and not be restricted by a veto of the city next to them.
Any further discussion? Representative Green?
I'd like to go on the record of pointing out that I don't think an economically non-feasible city ought to be formed. And I don't think a city ought to be formed if it really harms adjoining cities. I think these things need to be taken into consideration. But just as we dealt with a bill last week about giving the county commissions the right to make decisions in their county, it would seem to me this is another example of that. It would seem to me this is the proper place for this decision to be made in the vote of the people and in the county commission. And I would have confidence that at least most of the county commissions I'm familiar with would be able to say, no, we're not going to approve this proposal for a city. It doesn't make sense, and it's just going to cause trouble, and we're not going to approve it. But it seemed to me it is the county commission that's the right place for that to happen, not in neighboring cities.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2722 to the floor with the DPS recommendation.
Representative Anderson has moved House Bill 2722 to the floor with the DPS recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Ackerman. Anderson.
Aye.
Greenhut.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Sumner.
Aye.
Chair Gerard.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 2722 is moved to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Representative Greenlick or Representative Hunt, which one of you would like to carry this bill?
I'll carry it and Hunt can back me up.
Representative Greenlick will be the carrier. Committee, seeing no further business before us, we are adjourned.